The decisions that the government is going to have to make, whether it be the Chavista government or governor of the opposition, whatever government takes necessary measures
in order to
correct the economic situation, they will need a consensus. They will pay a political price. And if you don't have a consensus, it will be politically infeasible for the government to carry out these measures, these difficult economic measures, as a way out of the crisis.
We have to leave it there. Steve Illner, former professor and associate managing editor of the journal Latin American Perspectives. Thank you to Alejandro Velasco and Medea Benjamin. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 5 o'clock, and coming up next is your evening news.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Real Music Film Festival through February 16th at the Whitfield Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. On Thursday, January 31st, the Real Music Festival will screen the documentary Solo, The Evolution of the One-Man Band. This film investigates the history and present-day atmosphere of this special art form. Again, that's the Real Music Film Festival, showing Solo, The Evolution of the One-Man Band, on Thursday, January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Whitfield Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Golden Years in the Red on Tuesday, January 29th at 5:30 p.m. at the Multnomah County Central Library in Portland. Golden Years in the Red with Student Debt will feature informational speakers and people who will share their stories about debt, including garnishment of Social Security checks for student debt when grandparents and parents co-sign student loans. Again, that's Golden Years in the Red on Tuesday, January 29th at 5:30 p.m. at the Central Library, 810 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Hopworks Urban Brewery, offering sustainable brews and local food for 10 years, serving the community at three locations: Hopworks Urban Brewery on Southeast Powell Boulevard, Bike Bar at North Williams Avenue, and in Vancouver on Southeast Mill Plain Boulevard. More information is available online at hopworksbeer.com. The KBOO programming is also made possible by KBOO Foundation members, listeners, and support from True West, presenting Orgone with Pigwar, January 25th at Aladdin Theater. Tickets are on sale now at aladdin-theater.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the government shutdown has ended for now.
A police officer in Eugene will not be charged for killing a parent at a middle school earlier this month.
And in international news, tens of thousands of students rally across Europe to demand climate justice now.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 25th, 2019. I'm Rachel Hartley.
And I'm Michelle Coppola reporting. In Oregon news, the Eugene police officers who shot and killed a dad taking their child out of school on January 11th will not be charged. The district attorney's office ruled that the killing was justified. Charlie Landeros was a community activist in Eugene with the 12-year-old daughter who was a student at the school. Landeros was asked to leave by school security, who then called the police on the distraught parent. In the parking lot of the school, police decided that even though Landeros was leaving the school grounds as requested, they would arrest Landeros for disorderly conduct. When the police grabbed Landeros, they apparently pulled out a gun, at which point they were shot and killed.
A week after white supremacy with the Vancouver-based Patriot Prayer assaulted members of the IWW union in Portland, the union headquarters has been vandalized with spray paint. Unknown assailants wrote, and quote, smash communism and, quote, Antifa house on the IWW headquarters. They also spray painted the bar Cider Riot, which is known for its support for anti-fascists in Portland. The IWW, which stands for the Industrial Workers of the World, asked for donations of white paint to cover the graffiti. They stated that all unions should be concerned about this attack on the working class, saying an injury to one is an injury to all.
Local business Bullseye Glass has announced a $6.5 million settlement with plaintiffs in a class action lawsuit against Bullseye Glass in Southeast Portland. The glass manufacturer was accused of emitting unhealthy levels of toxic heavy metals into the air. Several people sued Bullseye in 2016 after raising concerns about the health of people living near the glassmaking facility. The settlement ends the lawsuit. Attorney fees and costs like expert witnesses will take about $2 million from the settlement. Another $1 million will be paying for air quality testing. The rest will be divided up among residents for things like air purifiers and soil testing. No money has been allocated for the health care costs of Southeast Portland residents.
Donald Trump this afternoon said that he will allow the government to temporarily reopen. The president announced the short-term agreement at the White House this afternoon, saying he will sign an order to restore normal operations at affected federal agencies until February 15th. That means furloughed federal workers and those being forced to work for free will begin getting paychecks again. The plan includes none of the money the president requested for the wall. The president threatened to declare a national emergency to force the funding of his border wall if no agreement is reached between Republicans and Democrats by February 15th. He says he has, in quote, drafted the emergency order that would authorize troops and federal resources to construct a barrier between the U.S. and Mexico, a barrier that virtually every security expert agrees is ill-conceived and ineffective. The wall would also violate tribal sovereignty on reservations along the border and is opposed by the local governments of most U.S. border towns. Speaker Nancy Pelosi has also indicated that once the federal government is fully operational again, she will consider a date for the president's State of the Union address.
While we're on the subject of Donald Trump, a close advisor to the president has been arrested by the FBI. Roger Stone has been charged with 7 counts, including making false statements and witness tampering. In arresting Roger Stone, the special counsel, Robert Mueller, revealed the most direct link yet between the Trump campaign and WikiLeaks in their release of files stolen from the Democratic Party headquarters by Russia that was to damage the election campaign of Hillary Clinton. The special counsel disclosed evidence today that in 2016, a top official from the Trump campaign sent Roger Stone, a longtime advisor to President Trump, to get information from WikiLeaks about the thousands of hacked Democratic emails. The effort began after evidence had emerged that Russian intelligence operatives were behind the theft. Stone was released after posting $250,000 bail.
Next, we'll go to Rising Up Sonali with Sonali Kolhatkar. She'll talk about Roger Stone's arrest by the FBI and other national topics.
While we are... My mic. Hello.
Hi.
While we're waiting for that report to get up here.
In today's news headlines, the FBI on Friday arrested Roger Stone, an associate of President Donald Trump. The arrest is a result of an indictment by special counsel Robert Mueller for Stone's role in seeking stolen emails from WikiLeaks on behalf of the Trump presidential campaign. According to the indictment, quote, after the July 22, 2016 release of stolen Democratic National Committee emails by Organization One, a senior Trump campaign official was directed to contact Stone about any additional releases. and what other damaging information Organization One had regarding the Clinton campaign. Stone thereafter told the Trump campaign about potential future releases of damaging material by Organization One, end of quote. Organization One, of course, refers to WikiLeaks. Additionally, according to the indictment, quote, during the summer of 2016, Stone spoke to senior Trump campaign officials about Organization One and information it might have had that would be damaging to the Clinton campaign. Stone was contacted by senior Trump campaign officials to inquire about future releases by Organization One. A CNN reporter was on the scene when federal police knocked on Stone's doors in the early hours of Friday morning in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where he lives.
FBI, open the door!
Those are the sounds of FBI officers knocking on Trump associate Roger Stone's door on Friday morning before arresting him. According to the New York Times, Mr. Stone was charged with 7 counts, including obstruction of an official proceeding, making false statements, and witness tampering. In other news, the federal government shutdown continues as the U.S. Senate rejected 2 bills on Thursday to fund the government. Still, there was some movement toward dialogue when Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell immediately called Minority Leader Chuck Schumer to his office after the votes to examine how the Senate can proceed next to end the shutdown. Associated Press reports that President Donald Trump told reporters he'd support a, quote, reasonable agreement. He suggested he'd also want a prorated down payment for his long-sought border wall with Mexico, but didn't describe the term. He said he has other alternatives for getting wall funding. Those other alternatives likely include using emergency powers. Indeed, CNN reported on Thursday that the White House had been drafting a declaration of emergency and that it had identified about $7 billion in funding for Trump's border wall between the U.S. and Mexico. The draft, a copy of which was obtained by CNN, was last revised a week ago. As the government shutdown continues to devastate the 800,000 federal workers that have now missed 2 paychecks, U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross is under fire for expressing let-them-eat-cake sentiments in an interview. He said on CNBC that struggling workers should just get loans to tide themselves over until they receive back pay.
The banks and the credit union should be making credit available to them. When you think about it, these are basically government-guaranteed loans because the government has committed these folks will get their back pay once this whole thing gets settled down. So there really is not a good excuse why there really should be a liquidity crisis. Now, true, the people might have to pay a little bit of interest, but the idea that it's paycheck or zero is not a really valid idea. There's no reason why some institution wouldn't be willing to lend.
That's Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, a former investor who was once worth more than $2 billion. He received swift condemnation from federal workers for his suggestion to take out loans. Meanwhile, Democrats cast a more sympathetic tone. On Thursday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi addressed her successful cancellation of the president's State of the Union address.
It is so unimportant in the lives of the American people in terms of especially those who are victims of the shutdown, hostages to the president's applause line in a campaign speech. Thank goodness we put that matter to rest and then we can get on to the subject at hand. Open up government.
That's House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on Thursday remarking on the ongoing government shutdown and the cancellation of the State of the Union address, which is due to be given by Trump next Tuesday. The Guardian newspaper on Thursday published an anonymous op-ed by a federal worker who wrote, quote, "The shutdown is just the latest assault on our livelihoods. We need a reinvigorated labor movement at our backs." The writer explained, without a pushback from organized labor, more and more of the civil service continues to face ever deeper cuts. The question we should be asking is not whether federal workers will, can, or should strike. There's a different question, more immediately relevant to all of organized labor. In answer to that question, the anonymous op-ed author wrote, "How can federal workers and the jobs that we do, from protecting health and the environment to collecting taxes to maintaining public infrastructure and security, become central commitments of our society again? How can the broader labor movement start to see the modest first steps of rank-and-file federal workers as the necessary next steps toward defending the public sector from the privatizers and the deregulators?"
This Saturday, Portland Public Schools Visioning Initiative is putting out a call to students, family members, educators, administrators, and anyone who is interested in the school system to come out to a meeting at Madison High School in Northeast Portland. KBOO's Annette Newell spoke with Camille Ididibo, Portland Public Schools Corporate and Foundation Relations Officer, at the MLK celebration.
Portland Public Schools is in the process of establishing a new vision for the future of public education. And in this process, we want to do this alongside our community leaders. So everyone from the student to the parent to the educator to the workforce, community-based organizations. And so this Saturday, we're having a community engagement session at Madison High School anytime between 1 and 5 p.m. People can come and participate. But this is us saying as a community, these are the things that we want for our students, because they're worth it. And so this process will lead directly into the district's strategic planning, which will lead into the budget cycle. So we're being very intentional about change. And so it's exciting work. It's hard work, but we're doing it.
What kinds of changes do you think that the community is really demanding from the way we teach kids?
The way that we teach kids. Well, we've heard a lot about project-based learning, from differentiated learning, because not all students learn the same. We're playing with a lot of ideas. And so this visioning process is extending through May. And so there are going to be a lot of opportunities for the community to continue to speak into this process. So it's not baked yet. We don't have the vision. We're still collecting ideas. And then all the themes are going to emerge to the top.
I see a lot of notes about diversification here. More boy teachers, more black teachers, more student input. Where else? I saw, develop black teachers. Do you think that's an important part of what needs to change? Is that the educators themselves have to be more diverse?
Well, I think this is what the community is asking for, right? So at some levels, we definitely want representation in our schools, and we want to create cultures that are inclusive. And so that's the work that we're doing. I think if the community is saying it's important, then it's absolutely important.
Will there be other sessions like this, or is this
absolutely
the only one?
Absolutely. So there will be several. Or if you Google PPS Visioning, we have a landing page, and that has a lot of the community engagement sessions that we're currently doing, because we're doing small groups, and then there's going to be a next iteration of community engagement after this.
And you're asking for who? Parents, teachers?
Everyone. Students, parents, teachers, educators, community members, if you're in industry, in business, anyone, everyone. It's a city movement.
Again, that was Portland Public Schools' Camille Ididibo talking with KBOO's Annette Newell about this Saturday's event. If you're interested in going, it will be tomorrow from 1 till 5 p.m. at Madison High School on Northeast 82nd Avenue in Portland.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report with our news writer, Tammy Haptaez. At 6, it's Evergreen for Bread and Roses with Rachel Hartley. Then at 7, it's The Struggle with your friendly neighborhood agitator, Alyssa Pariah. Tonight's weather is partly cloudy with a low of 36 degrees with winds light and variable. Tomorrow's weather, a mix of clouds and sun in the morning, followed by cloudy skies during the afternoon. There will be a high of 52 degrees with winds of 5 to 10 miles per hour. Today in history, Sojourner Truth addressed the first Black Women's Rights Convention in Akron, Ohio in 1851. Also in history, 47 years ago, in 1972, Shirley Chisholm, the first African-American woman elected to U.S. Congress, announces her candidacy for president. The quote of the day is from Sun Ra, and quote, "The earth cannot move without music. The earth moves in a certain rhythm, a certain sound, a certain note. And when the music stops, the earth will stop."
The Trump administration lawyers today urged the Supreme Court on Friday to intervene in a dispute over the 2020 census and uphold their plan to ask everyone about their citizenship. This comes after California was successful in their lower court ruling, claiming that the citizenship question is unconstitutional. 2 weeks ago, a federal judge in New York ruled that Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross had violated federal procedural law by ignoring the advice of census experts, who said adding a citizenship question would lead to an inaccurate count. Now it appears the case will be headed to the Supreme Court for a decision.
14 Palestinians were hospitalized with gunshot injuries Friday in the Gaza Strip, including a teenage girl, a young boy, a paramedic, and a journalist. Across the Gaza Strip on Friday, Palestinian civilians held nonviolent protests along the Gaza-Israel border as part of the Great March of Return that has continued each Friday for nearly 10 months. Israeli forces responded by attacking the protesters with live ammunition, concussion grenades, and tear gas. This marks the 44th weekly March of Return, a movement which began on March 30th, 2018, with Palestinian protesters demanding an end to the Israeli siege and a right to return to their villages and towns occupied by Israel. According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, a teenage girl was among those injured. She was shot with a live bullet in the leg on the eastern border of Gaza City. Another child, a boy, was reportedly injured east of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. Video footage shows that the paramedic was targeted by a high-velocity tear gas canister fired at close range. These so-called non-lethal weapons have caused death and permanent injuries when fired directly toward protesters, which is how they are often used by the Israeli military.
Down to South America now, where the coup in Venezuela has led to a major confrontation between some of the world's superpowers. The U.S. is leading the support of the opposition leader who is attempting to overthrow the democratically elected president. Other countries that support the coup include the new right-wing government of Bolsonaro in Brazil, Argentina, Chile, and Colombia. Countries that support President Maduro include Bolivia, China, Cuba, and Russia. Maduro started a second term on January 10th, following an election last year that many foreign governments refused to recognize. On Wednesday, Juan Guaido, the leader of the opposition-controlled National Assembly, declared himself interim president. Shortly after Guaido took an oath swearing himself in before his supporters, U.S. President Donald Trump publicly recognized him as the country's leader. In response, Maduro broke off diplomatic ties with the United States and gave U.S. diplomats 72 hours to get out of his country. Maduro accused Guaido of staging a coup and ordered his arrest.
An estimated 10,000 students took to the freezing cold streets of Berlin, Germany on Friday to add their voices to the growing youth-led global uprising to end the climate crisis. The hashtag Friday for Future march in Berlin was held as students across Switzerland also held protests on Friday. It comes 2 days after 35,000 young people marched in Brussels. They organized under the banner Climate Strike, vowing to strike from school and jobs until the climate crisis is addressed. The climate strike movement was sparked by 15-year-old activist Greta Thunberg of Sweden, who held a one-person sit-in outside of the Capitol building for months. The students in Germany marched to the Ministry of Economics, where a conference focused on the country's coal industry was being held. Outside the building, they called on the nation's leaders to phase out coal immediately.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 25th, 2019. Here are the main points again. The government shutdown has ended for now. A police officer in Eugene will not be charged for killing a parent at a middle school earlier this month. And in international news, tens of thousands of students rally across Europe to demand climate justice now. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Annette Newell, Emily Gresham Beamer, Oliver Minslow, and Alex Reidlinger. The producers are Annette Newell and Rachel Hartley, and our engineer is Mike Fatakaris. The director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Rachel Hartley. A podcast and transcript of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Rachel Hartley. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, more talk radio with Cecil and Celeste. At 9, the Old Mo Variety Hour will address corporate taxes, retirement security, and open borders. At 10, on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein will speak with the author of These Are Strange Times, My Dear, Field Notes from the Republic. At 11, it's Disability Awareness. And at 11:30, on Voices for the Animals, host Courtney Scott talks to anti-rodeo activist Eric Mills. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Beautiful performance is by Jasmine White. Jasmine White lives in Portland, Oregon, and is a professional opera singer. Just in her mid-20s, and she's already on her way to big things. Here's my interview with Jasmine. I heard some of the videos that you sent me. It's so pretty.
Thank you.
It's like angelic.
Angelic. Some of those videos were pretty old.
Do you do any stuff in English, or is it mostly different languages?
I sent you one in English. It's called Trees on the Mountain, but it's like 4 years old. I'm Jasmine White. I currently live in Portland, Oregon. I am originally from a little reservation on the coast out here, Grand Ronde. And that's pretty much where I started singing. I started taking voice and piano lessons when I was 6. One lady in the town over, and, you know, just very basics getting started. And that sort of made me fall in love with music, and I kept going from there. I took a few years of piano lessons with her before deciding to move on and start in band at school. And in band, they just happened to have a bass there. A really nice, I remember it was a Fender fretless jazz bass.
Nice.
Right? It was pretty solid. So I raised my hand immediately, like, I will be the one to play that. Please choose me. And nobody else raised their hands. I got it. And then from there, I was in jazz band all 4 years and really, really focused on the band and drama and choir departments there. We all had our own little building on campus for high school, and we all just kind of stayed in that little group. We're always making music on our breaks, you know, lunch break. We're always in the band room playing just typical band nerds. So then from there, I pretty much, senior year of high school, I had to make the decision, what instrument am I going to focus on from now until the end of grad school? And I chose opera. At first, I also chose double bass, and that became a little too much. So I cut that out for a little while, just did bass for fun, and solely focused on opera for pretty much the last 8 years.
And you said that you studied when you were younger, so was it mostly classical, or what kind of music did you initially start learning or making?
So it was actually like, I'm not really sure she specified what type of style she was. It was just that very basic, here's how to read music, here's basic theory, here's what a note in a scale is, and how to build basic chords. I would say the singing, I did a lot of like pop singing at the time. I grew up in a family that was heavily, heavily religious, even though I wasn't, had to go along with it, being a child of that family, and that led me to singing a lot of church music. But I will say over the evolution of my church music experience started definitely from that early beginning in pop, Christian acoustic guitar stuff.
Yeah, the singer-songwriter stuff, as we say.
And then I would say, opposite of most people, I ended up going back to super early, like monk kind of stages of music where there was a lot of chanting, and I studied in school. And I kind of became obsessed with early church music. And when I say early, I'm not just talking about chanting. I'm talking about even like 1800s, 1700s. There's just such amazing music. And even though I'm not religious, like I still consistently go sing at churches because that music is some of the most beautiful and passionate music I've ever sung. And I don't think I could do without it. I'm doing one this week, too.
That's so interesting because you have the Christian background and the pop background and the bass and then opera. What would you say are like some of the commonalities, or because they're so different from one another and yet
they are,
here you are,
super duper different. So I got started specifically on bass. Told you about like the bass that my school had, but I had been interested in playing bass a little bit before that because every guy on my dad's side of the family is a bassist. A distant cousin of mine is Verdine White from Earth, Wind, and Fire. He's the bassist there. And he kind of inspired all the guys on that side of the family to start playing bass. And that also inspired me and took the opportunity as soon as it arose. And it was easy to stick to it. My dad's family was also always super supportive, but they weren't really around much. We lived in Oregon. They lived in California. One of those kind of things. I stuck with bass mostly just for fun. I was just having a good time at it. But when it came to singing, I actually started voice lessons going into high school. Right out of middle school, my choir teacher was like, "Hey, I think there's some potential in you. I definitely know that you love to sing, and I think you should take voice lessons." And I was so offended. I was like, "I'm not good enough." But I'm so glad for that moment I sucked up my teenage ego.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, I will go see a voice teacher. Her name was Jane Atherstone, and she changed my life. She currently lives in Arizona, but we were studying in California at this time for high school, going in originally for like a half hour a week, an hour a week, very standard. And then there came a point in time when I just couldn't afford to do this anymore, but I was starting to really love classical singing. A poor family, lessons are not always a possibility.